noticing that, so I didn't ask.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm going to go ahead and convene this meeting of the Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development. Today, of course, February 5th, 2015. Just wanted to indicate for the record that co-chair Johnson is excused today. And we may have some other members joining us as soon as they can. But today we're going to be getting an overview of the governor's budget. Mr. Bender, did you want us to give us an overview of the overview that we're about to get?
Sure, Mr. Co-Chair. We have representatives here from the governor's office and chief financial office who will be talking to you about the guidelines, the policies that they use to put together the governor's budget and some of the major requests that you'll find in there. Just as a reminder, we didn't really get to this yesterday in the orientation, but the agency presentations are being broken up into three phases, phase one, phase two, and phase three. Most of these details we're going to ask that agencies bring back to you in phase two to discuss in detail the requests in the governor's budget, but this will be an introduction to you to see what to expect and an opportunity for you to get further information from the people who put this budget together.
Excellent. I see most members of the committee, unlike myself, brought their laptops so that they can review these on their own machines as opposed to squinting at the big screens behind us. And if the delegation from the governor's office would like to come forward and introduce themselves. I'm not sure who's leading off.
I'll go ahead and introduce myself for the record. Good afternoon, Co-Chair Gomberg, members of the committee. For the record, Dustin Ball, and I'm with the Chief Financial Office.
Good afternoon, Co-Chair Gomberg, members of the committee. My name is Carmen Ford. I'm the Transportation Policy Advisor for Governor Kitzhaber.
And Co-Chair Gomberg, members of the committee, my name is Vince Porter, and I'm the Governor's Policy Advisor on Economy and Jobs.
Excellent. Well, thank you for being here today.
Thank you. Do you want me to go ahead and start, Dustin?
Go.
Yes. So thank you, Steve, for mentioning that it will be very high level, and we'll rely on our agencies to dive deep, but we'll be happy to answer any questions if you want more detail from us. The governor's budget really focused on, at the top level, on priorities, and the three on that first slide were investing in children and families, creating good jobs, and building statewide prosperity. So that's where we started. From identifying the policy and investment priorities. And that's important to say that we focused on those priorities and not the programs, and the priorities being the outcomes that we are hoping to achieve. And the outcomes we're basing on what the governor's approached on a 10-year, longer-term strategy where we can see real outcomes over a longer period of time. And so the focus has been investing on areas of change and innovation. Some of that relates to how he's looked at early learning and healthcare. Today we'll try and talk a little bit more on the economic development and transportation. The first approach that the governor asked us all to take forth is basically starting from where we were at in 2013 and 2015. So our task was to deal with assuming that there's a flat budget from the 2013-15 session. From that, there was, at the time, there was $1.8 billion additional revenue over the flat budget from 13 and 15. And that's what we all wrestled with internally over where to spend or recommend spending that money. I think I'll go on to the slide three or four and turn it over to you, Carmen.
Okay, terrific. So articulated in the governor's budget is a vision that supports a diverse, dynamic, and sustainable economy that drives jobs and creates prosperity for all Oregonians. And how that fits into the 10-year plan is the intent is to streamline efforts to attract, grow, and support businesses in Oregon, to partner with local governments and the private sector on key investments, to build and maintain infrastructure critical to a sustainable economy, and to develop a dynamic, resilient workforce that will be attuned to Oregon's priorities. So as part of this, the governor identified major issues of importance. One, first and foremost, is providing infrastructure that is critical to sustaining Oregon's economy. Another piece was also identified the need for improving access to safe and affordable housing for Oregonians.
We're going to do our best to go back and forth here, but another part was prioritizing our communities that are not necessarily realizing the recovery the way some of our metro regions. And so in the governor's budget, and we made sure to point this out, that there was a particular focus on finding ways to make strategic and smart investments in rural Oregon that in total amounted to over $200 million. Some of those will be before this committee. Some of those will be in natural resources, ways and means committee. And I'll point out a few in our, just so that you're aware of some of the things that we consider as good economic development investments in rural Oregon that are in addition to what you'll be looking at. Also, a focus was to streamline our efforts to attract and grow and support businesses. And this is also in tandem with Business Oregon and their new approach and new theme of grow our own, and that's really focusing on making sure that we're looking first inward in our businesses. We believe 70% of all our future job creation will happen with businesses that exist within the state. And so the importance there is that as Business Oregon looks at their work and their work plan, that they're making sure that they're addressing those businesses first, and when there are gaps in between that require recruitment, that we also use our recruitment initiatives to fill those gaps. Another key element that's not a very big dollar number, but something that we've learned over the summer when we went around 11 regions in the state, is the need for technical assistance in our rural regions, where there are resources available to some of our communities, but they don't necessarily always have the resources to go after and get them. That could be in the form of a land use issue, could be in the form of a federal grant. And so within the governor's budget, and I'm not sure if it's in front of your committee or others, there was a proposal to put in some additional positions that could go out and work with these communities and really give them the opportunity to go out and compete for those resources available to them that they currently don't have the capacity to compete. And a lot of that is done through our regional solutions coordinators, but also throughout the agencies. Another key element is two or three positions that's a combination within, I believe, LCDC and regional solutions permit streamlining. I think we call it regulatory alignment. But another key thing that we think is important to economic development is sometimes if you just are able to work with your businesses and get them to see their permits moving on a timely fashion, that's as important to them, if not more important sometimes, than the money that we may or may not have. Finally, another thing that's a part of our focus is really coordinating with local governments and the private sector on how we leverage the funds that we do have and using and partnering with them so that we are not working cross-purpose. And that also includes working with federal organizations like the USDA and EDA as well. So those are really important to us as we're looking at these investments to make sure that they're going to not stand on their own, but work with existing programs at the federal level and also in the private sector.
So how does this budget begin to address some of the major issues we just identified? In the realm of transportation, one of the priorities for the governor is that we continue to strive to make multimodal investments in a transportation system. It's a key strategy to support economies all across Oregon. One of the things that he did include in his budget was a continuation of the Connect Oregon program to create a Connect Oregon 6. And Connect Oregon is an investment program to put funds toward non-highway projects aimed at promoting economic development. And it goes towards projects like port infrastructure, public transportation, our aviation system, bike and pedestrian facilities, and our rail network as well. Another place under this particular area is also funds to support and maintain passenger rail service as it currently exists in Oregon. You may or may not be aware, but in a 2008 federal reauthorization bill for passenger rail, Congress began to take away the subsidy that is provided for rail corridors 750 miles or less. We are a part of a corridor from Eugene, Oregon to Vancouver, BC that is would fall under that category, meaning the federal subsidy is going away. Starting this year is the first year where we no longer benefit from the subsidy to support passenger rail service. So the actual cost to maintain it in Oregon is $22.6 million. We worked with the agency to see what sort of funds can we cobble together to really buy that number down. And some of the funds that the body has identified in the past that can be used for passenger rail service include things like vanity license plates, fees from things like that, as well as tax, you know, funds we receive out of the lawnmower fund. So we bought it down, but there was still a gap of $10.4 million. The governor in his budget included funds to maintain passenger rail service for that purpose. Other items in the budget, he also included funds to provide for affordable housing for low-income Oregonians. The budget itself, as constructed by the governor, provides around $100 million targeted at providing investments, particularly for homeless families with children, but also for at-risk populations, seniors, people with disabilities as well. And part of this is to address a couple variables. One of the factors we do know that's happening in Oregon is that rents are increasing much faster than wages, and this is leaving a whole number of Oregonians and working families struggling to find housing. Another variable that has captured the attention of Oregon's governor is that it's been identified through the Department of Education that close to 20,000 of Oregon's public school children are homeless. And if he sees as the state's going to meet its long-term objectives around education and health care outcomes, it's important that those families have access to housing. So on part of this strategy, and the agency will come, this is not my area of expertise, so I'd strongly encourage you to follow up with them subsequent to my remarks here. But part of how they'd use those funds is to help assist in the ownership. The state would provide funds in part to be an owner and work with nonprofits and local governments to help structure affordable housing for Oregonians. And basically what that would mean is we would work in partnership with these entities who already operate low-income housing to meet the needs for homeless families and other folks struggling to find housing right now.
Another piece on relating to bonds that's a rather large number, but I think everyone has recognized the importance of it, is to ensure the infrastructure stability of our schools and emergency service buildings. So in the bond, in the governor's list of bond requests, includes $100 million of general obligation bonds for seismic retrofitting of schools. $70 million of that 100 would go for schools, and $30 million of it would go for emergency buildings, and those are general obligation bonds. In addition, this isn't on our list, but I wanted to make a point, because I know Senator Hansel is particularly interested, but I want to make a point about a key rural infrastructure program that the governor put into bonds is also in the water resources development. We have $50 million in to look at how we can improve and increase our water supply and resource development. And I know that will be heard in many other places, but we do see that as a key investment in our rural economy, and we're looking forward to discussing that. So going back to the bonds, also we have $35 million in of lottery bonds that are for the Brownfield Redevelopment Program and also the Special Public Works Fund. If you talk to many people in our communities around the state, they see these funds as critical to redeveloping some of their industrial lands and then also some of their crumbling infrastructure in water and sewer and broadband. Most of these funds are quickly, the existing funds within that are quickly running out, and so we made it a priority to put as much as we could into that in the lottery bond request. In addition, There's $25 million of lottery bonds in for two other programs, $10 million for a new program that provides some more flexibility as we're looking at opportunities in rural Oregon around infrastructure, and it's called the Oregon Infrastructure Opportunity Program, where we would, much like Special Public Works Program does, or the ODOT's Immediate Opportunity Fund, would provide some more flexibility when we see opportunities happening in our rural regions where particular projects are at risk of going one way or another based on an infrastructure investment. So that program, Business Oregon, will come in and explain sort of the thought process behind it. I also asked Tom Tuckman to come up and speak to you just a little bit about the Working Forest and Farms Finance Initiative that he's been working on and could speak to for a little bit. So I'm going to come up.
Musical chairs. Chair Gomberg, members of the committee, my name is Tom Tuckman. I'm the governor's forestry and conservation finance advisor. I'll be short. As part of the governor's budget, we have a total of $30 million, $15 million of which would go through Business Oregon for Working Farms and Forest revolving loan and loan guarantee program. As you know, 26 million acres of forest and farmland in the state. They serve as the economic foundation of many of our rural communities and actually many of our urban communities as well. We see another approximately 1.7, we expect the population of the state to grow by 47% in the next 40 years, and there's tremendous pressure on these landowners. And so the purpose of this fund, these two funds, revolving loan fund and the loan guarantee program, would be to provide access to capital for landowners, both existing landowners and new landowners that want to retain working forest and farmlands. And we have a companion bill introduced in addition to the budget that would lay out how the program would work. Right now it's a little bit of a placeholder form. We've got a work group of folks from the landowner community and the conservation community working together to try and reach some agreement on how that would operate. And we would look forward to your questions, comments, and interest in that provision.
If you have Mr. Tuckman, before you leave, we have a question, Representative.
Sure, you bet.
Yeah, I was just wondering, why would we be using Business Oregon for the funds to go the $25 or $30 million for the Forest Farms Initiative? Finance initiative.
Yeah, Representative Whitsitt, thank you for that question. The programs that would be immediately relevant to this committee are the loan guarantee and the revolving loan fund. In addition, there's a $15 million grant program. The way we structured the program is that those loan programs would go through Business Oregon, because Business Oregon has the experience and expertise in making those kinds of loans. The grant program would go through OWEB, and the thinking is, it's interesting, you know, historically there hasn't been a lot of focus in rural areas from Business Oregon. And as they would readily point out, they need assistance from Department of Forestry, Department of Agriculture, to reach out to landowners to make them aware of these kinds of programs if they are indeed authorized. And so the idea is that forestry, agriculture, Business Oregon, and OWEB, which would run the grant program, would create an interagency committee to run these programs in concert. And therefore, the technical expertise that forestry and ag has can be used by Business Oregon and vice versa.
So, follow up, please.
So will they be acting as a bank with regard to how the people come to them and then ask for these funds or apply for them? But they aren't really a bank. But are they going to act as a bank?
No, they will not be acting as a bank. They will be acting in the same way they act for other loan guarantee and revolving loan programs. So, for example, if a landowner, you know, there's an acquisition, they need to borrow $2 million. They would go to a private lender and apply for that, and concurrently apply for a loan guarantee to that $2 million in private capital. And that's how it would work.
Okay.
Very good.
Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Tuckman.
another key part of the governor's budget in Business Oregon is his $40 million recommended investment in innovation and entrepreneurship. As some of you know, Business Oregon is setting up for the first time a division of titled Innovation and Entrepreneurship, and I'm sure Director Robbins will come and talk to you a little bit about that. But within the $40 million includes a recommendation of $29.4 million for Oregon Inc. Within Oregon Inc., all of those are existing, and I know Representative Reed could probably go even deeper in detail on Oregon Inc., but those are all existing programs with some opportunities to make some strategic investments in SOAR Oregon and some additional commercialization funds with some of our signature research centers that are pumping out some incredible technology. In addition, there's a new program within Oregon Inc. Surrounding the Internet of Things that I'm looking forward to you hearing about. Also included in that number is $4.75 million of lottery funds for the Industrial Competitiveness Fund. Within there, that includes the Oregon Metals Initiative, the Northwest Manufacturing Collaboratory, and I think that's sorry, I'm blanking on the other one, but I think those are the only two in that. And then finally, a new program that's being recommended, which is our Natural Resource Transformative Technology Grant Program. And what we see this is we definitely see opportunities in our natural resource economy to make some forward-thinking investments that are beyond a one-year or two-year investment. I'm sure some of you were at the Business Summit and heard what Oregon State University and the University of Oregon is doing in the relating to wood products. We also see some great opportunities in precision agriculture surrounding UAV and other investments. So this is intended to be a fund where new ideas and new technologies could be funded to advance and provide Oregon, make Oregon a leader in these opportunities. Finally, we also have included $2 million per region, per 11 regions, for the regional solutions priority projects that have been going forward and part of the regional solutions team. As is somewhat consistent with the last round, $7 million of that is intended to be lottery funds because they are not capital construction related, and then 14 would come through as lottery bonds.
So finally, a little bit on the differentiation on general fund and lottery fund amounts in the governor's recommended budget and what you will find in the co-chair's framework. When you drill into the governor's recommended budget, you'll find it provides around $368 million in both general and lottery fund elements, both for transportation, economic development, and consumer and business services. The co-chair's framework doesn't speak to that same amount. There's about a $54-55 million difference. They've identified $313 million approximately in bonded amounts right now. So, well, what would not be identified in the co-chair's budget that the governor has and the governor's recommended? For example, the Connect Oregon program that I spoke to you about earlier in my remarks. We envision there's a lot of support in the body for Connect Oregon, but would recognize that the legislature wants to reserve the opportunity to go back and forth on what are those priority elements you're going to discuss that deserve bonded dollars. But you can drill through and see in great specificity in the governor's recommended budget where he would articulate what his priorities are within his budget, captured within his budget. And so with that, we're happy to entertain any questions you all may have.
Questions from the panel? Representative Whitson.
I was wondering if you could describe the subsidy for the passenger rail service between Eugene and Portland. That's not Amtrak, right? It's a separate thing. And per ticket, is it, $185 a ticket that this would subsidize?
Co-Chair Gomberg, Representative Whitsett, the subsidy would be for the trains that the state of Oregon owns. The state of Oregon purchased two train sets. They referred to them as the Taugo train sets. And that's separate and apart from the Amtrak service, which is the Coastal Starlight. Those are the long train routes from Los Angeles up to Seattle. So these are trains that operate north and south between Portland and Eugene. And they were purchased using a Federal Transit Administration grant. It was the WCHO grant, so I think it was around 2009, 2010 when the state purchased those trains. Part of why the state purchased those trains was to preserve service. We had been using trains from the state of Washington, and they received some funds from the federal government and pulled those trains back to do service from the Portland to Seattle corridor. Absent those train purchase, we would have lost that service here in the state of Oregon. If we do not maintain our investment in passenger rail, the state will have to reimburse the federal government back for the grant amounts. And it's approximately around $34 million, near $35 million. It's a depreciating amount for the grant. We'd likely also have to find somebody who could take over or try to find another entity that could maybe purchase those trains. We have had an experience in the past where we did go without passenger rail service, and it was quite expensive to re-up that service with Union Pacific. The estimates over around a 10-year absence of train service, we would likely be on expecting to have to pay Union Pacific around $146 million to re-up that service again. So it is an expensive prospect at this point to not maintain passenger rail service in Oregon. As for the ticket price, and thank you for reminding me, I honestly don't know that ticket price off the top of my head, but I'm happy to get you that information.
Okay, and I have one other question,
please.
If I could. Does the train go up and return back to Eugene each day, or if you go to Portland from Eugene, do you have to stay overnight in order to catch the train back to Eugene?
Representative Gomberg, Representative Whitsitt, there are two trains that run each day, north and south, so you can go up and then come back later in the day on the train.
Okay.
Representative Nierman.
Thank you, Chairman Gomberg. So I thought I heard you say that that the original grant, or that we purchased the trains in 2008, you said that we purchased them in 2009, 2010, but that the grant money was announced was going to end in 2008. I assume it was going to go down. Why would whoever would we get in on something that's kind of a dying ember like that, something that's guaranteed to not have any federal support?
Chair Gomberg, Representative Nierman, you're correct. I wasn't here at the time when the transits were purchased. Overall, when looking at transportation, one of the things we have seen is passenger rail ridership has actually gone up. This last year, we have seen conflicts in part because of increased commodity traffic on the Class 1 rail lines. That's been happening nationwide, and Congress is looking at working with the Class 1 railroads on that issue. But we have seen passenger ridership increasing significantly over the last 10 years. But part of why you have a range of options is we want to preserve on our highways, for movement of freight traffic. And one of the strategies the state has had for a long time is to better use passenger rail service as a strategy and other modes of transportation to better use people, to move people around. We do anticipate, and I was actually looking at census figures yesterday of all things, looking at projections into 2030. And we're one of the states that's projected to grow most quickly, about 1.4 million people, and we will likely have the same assets we have today, for the most part, to move people around. So it is important to us, as we see congestion impacting other parts of the country and how it impacts commerce and goods and service movements, for us to be regionally and strategically efficient and seeing the growth coming. This one of the strategies really has been, what are those alternative ways to move a lot of people and get them off the freeways so we can preserve that service to move freight goods that need that, when we're really relying on just-in-time service.
Can I follow up?
Please.
So, to kind of pick up on Representative Whitsitt's point of the ticket prices there. So, as I understood, for the last biennium, the passenger rail takes in, rough numbers here, maybe $5 million, but it costs about $18 million to run. And so that would be kind of roughly in line with what you're saying the subsidy is per ticket there. Again, you say, oh, the ridership is up, but if you're subsidizing a ticket to the tune of 300%, I would say, yeah, that's a good deal. So it wouldn't surprise me that the ridership's up. I wonder, what kind of impact do you have on traffic on I-5? Do you have any kind of idea on that? Or is it just
people that are just riding the train or something like that?
Chair Gomberg, Representative Nierman, and I realized I failed to mention what the issue is with the two. There were separate federal legislation. First, to the railroad reauthorization, and in fact, the House Transportation Infrastructure Committee just dropped a bipartisan bill to reauthorize Amtrak and would provide a lot of greater efficiencies for states that we'd be very interested in to make the system work better for us and also create some cost efficiencies we've been seeking. But what they did in 2008 was, on the shorter routes, start to walk away from that subsidy, and it's something that had been in place for several decades. Oregon, because of our tax structure, we don't quite have some of the flexibilities that other states do. So, you know, you all have been very creative in looking at things like lawnmower fund and, you know, vanity plates and a whole host of other variables to preserve that service. What they did in the last round of scheduling for the trains was trying to hit the commuter traffic, but ultimately it is a lot of people who are doing point-to-point destination visits, going from Eugene to maybe have a shopping day in Portland and come back. And I'd strongly encourage you to have the ODOT Rail Division staff come in. They have quite a bit of research survey on the ridership, who's riding, because I think you're getting at the right question. But it's certainly older folks are riding the train significantly, and a significant increase in younger people. I think folks in the middle years aren't using the train or at the greatest percentage, but we are seeing a usage shift in cohorts of people within the state of Oregon. I would strongly encourage you to get greater detail from them. But I will also get you, you know, kind of the cost per ticket information, because I understand how important that is.
And thanks for the tip on the survey data, too.
Absolutely.
Other questions? Yes, Senator.
I'm assuming that later on we're going to have the rail transportation folks before us to really get down in the weeds, because I think I've got a concern also, which Representative Nierman brought up, that the subsidy, it sort of sounds like if we don't subsidize them, we're going to lose a lot more money because it's got to pay stuff back, and it seems like it's kind of a a vicious circle here, that we've got a program that isn't paying for itself, but we're subsidizing it because it'll cost more, and I'm just having some disconnect there. So I don't need to answer.
Okay.
I mean, you can answer if you wish, but I know we're going to get into the details later on. So,
Chair Gomberg, Senator Hansel, what I would say, and I appreciate that perspective, and what is true, we're struggling across all lines of transportation to preserve service. And when I'm looking at transportation across the board, I'm trying to think through, how do we manage airspace in the United States that's already congested? You know, how do we ensure we've got bus service so if I'm living in Burns, I can still connect to and get see my family members wherever they are? And how do we, and we've had experiences where we've lost bus service into rural communities. How do we do strategy to make sure our freight corridors are moving as efficiently as they possibly can? And similarly, a lot of Oregonians strongly support passenger rail service as well. We are finding we're subsidizing all lines of transportation at this point, including our highways. Ultimately, it's thinking through, when I think about the systems, how are we going to run them efficiently as we possibly can, and thinking for the changes that are coming so we have those alternatives so folks can get around in our state. And business and goods and services can move. So, but certainly I think that drill in with the agency staff on their findings, because it would be useful for you.
Any other questions? Well, Mr. Porter, Ms. Foer, Mr. Ball, Mr. Tuckman, thank you for an effective and an efficient presentation. Mr. Ball, you didn't get a speaking role today? Or?
Not today. Maybe
okay.
Another day.
All right. Well, I'm sure we'll have you back. Thanks again. Mr. Bender, do you have anything more for us today?
Just to mention that, of course, you'll be getting a lot more information on all of these items before you're going to be asked to take a position on them or to vote on funding them. But it's very helpful to get this overview at this time. Also, starting next week, please remember that you will be scheduling your first budgets. On Monday, you have scheduled the Racing Commission. Tuesday will be Real Estate Agency. And Wednesday, we don't have any meetings scheduled. Thursday will be Department of Aviation. These will all be public hearings only, with public testimony. So you won't be asked, there won't be any voting or decisions made, but this will be opportunities to delve more deeply into those budgets, agencies, and issues. So.
Anything for the good of the order? All right, well, Senator Johnson will be back, and she'll have the gavel next, and we'll reconvene on Monday.
Monday, that's correct.
We are adjourned. Monday.
Monday, that's correct.
We are adjourned. We'll reconvene on